Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. Joining us on this Sunday morning is Bill Dean. He's an award-winning baseball researcher. He lives in Cooperstown, New York. He's the author of 9 books and hundreds of articles on the national pastime. He's got a book that is out. It's put out by McFarland Publishing. It's called Baseball's Who's Who of What Ifs, Players Derailed en Route to Cooperstown. And it's appropriate because that's where Bill is. Bill, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us.
Well, thanks, Marty. Nice to join you.
Yeah, it's a the book is a pleasure. And the fans know that when I talk about these books on the air, this is one you could pick up at any moment. And there's so many chapters about players whose careers were derailed en route to Cooperstown that the stories just bring these players back to life very quickly and their problems. So tell me about the book. How did it come about and why did you choose this subject?
I think it started when I was about 11 years old and I was reading about a player by the name of Pete Reiser who played for the Brooklyn Dodgers in the 1940s. And he was off to a sensational start in his career in 1941, led the National League in just about every category you could imagine. Was a great outfielder, a great base runner, a great hitter. But he didn't know when to stop running after a fly ball, and they had no warning tracks in those days. And he had a habit of crashing into concrete walls trying to catch up with long drives to the outfield and suffered a series of injuries and concussions, and little by little his talents were diffused until he was just no longer an effective player. And I always remember that story, and I guess it kind of planted a seed as to what other players were on track for what might have been Hall of Fame careers that were derailed for whatever reasons, and started reading about others and living through other examples, and just eventually decided, it would be good to put them all in one place into a book, and so that's what I did.
Well, you sure did, and the book is terrific, Baseball's Who's Who of What Ifs. And Pete Reiser, it's a great example. Mickey Mantle was compared to Pete Reiser, and Reiser, of course, was a tremendous player, but he liked to run into walls, and they said he would have been just a superstar. So, all right, I can understand that. Now, there are so many chapters in the book of players whose careers were cut short, and it'd be great to get a couple of anecdotes from you, and one that, and we remember him in the Bay Area as well, and that is the slugger from the Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox. That's Tony Conigliaro. Tell us about him.
Tony came up to the Red Sox as a 19-year-old in 1964 and hit 24 home runs, which is still the record for most homers as a teenager. And then the next year he led the American League in that category, becoming the youngest home run champ ever. At age 22 in 1967, he hit his 100th career homer, becoming the second youngest ever to reach that milestone. And all this was during a period of depressed offense where pitchers enjoyed a 15-inch high mound and the biggest strike zone of all time. So he was really putting up some impressive numbers at a young age. Then on August 18, 1967, Conigliaro was slammed in the temple by a fastball. There were no ear flap helmets in those days. And his left eye was swollen shut for a week. When it finally opened, doctors found that he had had a perforated retina and 2300 vision in that eye. Tony was able to make a courageous comeback 20 months later, but by 1971, his vision had deteriorated to the point where he could no longer compete, and his career was essentially over at age 26.
Wow. Yeah, great, great young hitter. Great young hitter. Well, that's a very good example. Mark Fidrich, and we've talked about him on the show. Of course, the bird flew onto the scene. He was so dramatic on Monday Night Baseball for the Tigers. And then all of a sudden, it stopped for him. What happened?
Well, Mark Fidrich pretty much came out of nowhere to become arguably the best pitcher in baseball in 1976. He had been the 232nd draft pick in the 1974 amateur draft, signed for just a $3,000 bonus, won just 14 games in two minor league seasons before joining the Tigers as a non-roster invitee in spring training 76. He made the team, but faced just six batters in the first 37 days of the season. But an illness to pitcher Joe Coleman gave Fidrich his chance to start a game, and he pitched a two-hit victory. And by the end of June, he was 8-1 with a 2.05 ERA. It had become a national sensation. As you mentioned, the Monday night game really cemented his reputation. And it was not just for his pitching, but for his antics on the field, like talking to the baseball. By the end of the year, he was 19-9 for a team that was far below 500. He'd completed 24 of 29 starts, which is more complete games probably than all Major League Baseball has pitchers have these days. He led the American League in ERA. He won the Rookie of the Year award. By modern measures, he's identified as the best overall pitcher in baseball for the year by win shares, total pitching wins, and WAR. And the next spring, Fidrich was needlessly shagging fly balls and suffered a knee injury, which required surgery. He came back too soon because his team needed him and quickly ran off six straight complete game victories. But then he paid the price when he suffered a rotator cuff injury. And for all intents and purposes, he was through at age 22. He won only four more big league games after that.
Well, he was amazing in that period of time. 22 years old, I didn't realize that. Yeah, Mark the Bird Fidrich, that's a good one too. Here's one that I like, and that is Jim Maloney. Now, he's from Fresno, California, and he pitched down there with Dick Ellsworth, who came up with the Cubs eventually. But Jim Maloney, he was fabulous in the 60s, and then all of a sudden for him, it stopped short of the Hall of Fame.
Jim Maloney was overshadowed by his contemporaries like Sandy Koufax and Bob Gibson and Juan Marichal, but he was said to be faster than any of them and almost as good as any of them. In 1963, Maloney went 23-7 with 265 strikeouts. In 65, he was 20-9 with two 10-inning no-hitters, though one of them was broken up in the 11th. And over a seven-year period, he went 117 wins, 60 losses with a 2.90 ERA. And he ranked third among all pitchers during that time in wins and win percentage and sixth in strikeouts. So he was right up there with the best at age 29. But then on April 16, 1970, he suffered a ruptured Achilles tendon while running the bases. And he did try to come back, but he never won another big league game after that.
Wow. Wow. He was the best. And I always thought he should have been a Hall of Famer. And what's striking me about these anecdotes, and they're all in the book, the stories are all in the book, Baseball's Who's Who of What Ifs, Base Players Derailed en Route to Cooperstown by Bill Dean, D-E-A-N-E. The ages. I didn't realize that 29 for Maloney, 22 for Mark Fidrich, and the early teenager years of Tony Conigliaro. Wow. Denny McClain. Now, I remember when he won 31 games for the Tigers and thought he was en route to Cooperstown. What happened to him?
Denny is yet another example of a pitcher who dominated at a young age. He was overworked, and he was finished just as he should have been reaching his prime. And as he mentioned, he's baseball's last 30-game winner. He went 31-6 at age 24 in 1968, was a unanimous American League MVP and Cy Young Award winner, then won another Cy Young Award the next year. And at age 25, he already had a career one-loss record of 114 wins, 57 losses. But he had pitched more than 700 innings in those last 2 years and underwent 39 cortisone shots so he could pitch through the pain. And by 1970, his arm was shot, and he had a lot of off-the-field problems on top of it. And won just 17 more games the rest of his career.
Wow. Yeah, he kicked around quite a bit and won a big game six in the World Series in 1968 for the Tigers.
That's right. And just a capper on the story, he later filed a workman's compensation suit against the Tigers and his other former teams, claiming they damaged his pitching arm beyond repair. And you want to guess what he settled for?
$25,000.
Good guess. It was $31,500 in 1977, an out-of-court settlement. And I mean, that's
not
like
much.
A day's work for a modern pitcher.
Yeah, well, half an inning's work for a modern pitcher. Bill Dean is with us. Bill, let's take another one here. Al Rosen, who, of course, we love in San Francisco and turned the franchise around with Roger Craig in the mid-'80s, but he had a tremendous baseball career, and he looked like he was on his way to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I'm sure many of your listeners know him as the GM of the Giants from 1986 to 92, including the 1989 pennant. But before that, he was a really good baseball player. His career was delayed by military service and just bad timing. There were 448 minor league teams in the late 1940s, all siphoning their talent into 16 major league teams. So there just wasn't an opening for Al until he was 26. And then hampered by two serious injuries, he was through at age 32. But in between, for peak value, he was among the very best third basemen in baseball history. Just to give some numbers and facts to back that up, in his first full season, 1950, Rosen had 37 home runs, which was more than all other AL third sackers combined. And then in 1953, he had unquestionably the greatest season ever by a third baseman. He played in all 155 games, led the AL in runs, 115, home runs, 43, RBI, 145, extra base hits, total bases, slugging, OPS, runs created, WAR, win shares. And in most of those categories, he didn't just lead the league, he just blew away the field. He had 52 more total bases than anybody else in the league, 30 more RBI, 13 more win shares than anyone else, clear of the number two man in slugging by 54 points and OPS by 113, and just missed the triple crown on his last at-bat of the season, losing the batting crown by 1 point. And he was off to an even better start in 1954 when he suffered his first serious injury. He moved to first base at management's request and suffered a badly broken finger fielding a ground ball. He refused to have it checked out. He tried playing through the injury but couldn't grip the bat properly, and finger never healed properly. And then in January 1956, he suffered leg, back, and neck injuries when he was rear-ended in his car. And after that, he could barely turn his head, and his production obviously suffered. And he retired after the season at age 32, but then went on to a long and successful post-playing career, as we know.
A good story. Al Rosen, he lost the triple crown by half a step at first base to Mickey Vernon.
Mickey Vernon
won the batting title over him. Orlando Cepeda is in the book, and all these are anecdotes from the stories that are in the book. As I say, you can pick it up and enjoy any chapter. Let's take one more. Orlando Cepeda is in the book, but he did make the Hall of Fame, but you feel his career was cut short.
Well, I did an honorable mention chapter on guys who did make the Hall of Fame, even though their careers were short or cut short. And Cepeda is one of them. He was one of my childhood favorites. And, you know, as of his 27th birthday in 1964, his career stats were almost identical to Hank Aaron's at the same age. But he suffered a serious knee problem, which cost him most of the next season and hampered him the rest of his career, and finished with roughly half of Aaron's career home run total, but still enough credentials to earn Veterans Committee selection in 1999.
It's a great book. I must tell you, I enjoy it. And And well, we'll end it with this. First of all, McFarland Press, and then we support the independent bookstores in the Bay Area. The Book Tree up in Montclair, David, I'm sure has it up there. But very quickly, without telling too much of the anecdote, because we're going to run out of some time, was there a favorite for you of all these chapters and all these people you wrote about? Because it is an extensive book.
That's a tough one. I mean, I have kind of a soft spot, as I said, for Cepeda and for Pete Reeder, because he kind of planted the seed in my mind, 50 years ago or so. And I thought I knew everything about baseball before I started the book, but I learned a lot more while doing the research and met and talked to some of the people who are featured in the book. I met Denny McLane, and he had to lift his right arm with his left arm in order to shake my hand. That's how badly his arm was abused through his pitching career.
Well, I love the book. It's terrific. Bill, I appreciate you being on with us. And baseball's who's who of what ifs, and it's one of those books you could pick up any chapter, and you are reliving the life of this ball player. Bill, thanks for being on the show, and good luck to you, and we'll have you on again.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Bill Dean. He lives in Cooperstown. Big doings up there this weekend, as well as what's coming up in September. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.